Good morning. This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. In the wake of recent violent events like the bombing at the Boston Marathon, today we're going to talk about ways of dealing with trauma and disaster and some of the emotional reactions that people have, and also ways to prepare for crises that you may or may not No, are on their way down the pike. We've got two guests to discuss this morning. Rahim Balsara is with the American Red Cross of New Mexico. He is the CEO. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Elaine.
And I've also got Chrissy Schmidt. She is a licensed mental health counselor in the state of New Mexico, and she's also worked with the United Way of Santa Fe County's Children's Project since 2009. Good morning, Chrissy. Thanks
Good
for
morning.
Joining us. So I wanted to start off first for you listeners. You're welcome to call in with your questions and comments. We'll be talking first about what kinds of evidence people might be seeing in their lives that stress and anxiety about violence, how is that manifesting? What are some of the behaviors that we can look for or recognize in our family or our workplace? And then also some of the strategies for coping and dealing and helping ourselves and people in our lives figure out how to respond in healthy ways to those experiences. If you would like to call in and share some of your thoughts, the number to call locally in Albuquerque is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can post comments online at KUNM.org, and you can also email us, and the email address is callinshow@KUNM.org. Rahim, I wanted to start with you. The Red Cross has kind of a press release and some materials online for folks to use, some resources. We do have a link posted at KUNM.org. What are some of the things that people can pay attention to, indications that people are experiencing some stress or anxiety related to these events like the bombing at the Boston Marathon or the explosion of the fertilizer plant in Texas?
Good morning, Elaine. Thank you very much for having us. You know, these are very, very stressful times for us as a nation. There are so many things going on, not only the Boston bombing, the West Texas explosion, but something that people don't realize is that there are major floods going on in the Midwest, and all of those disasters cause a lot of stress on everyone. People who are watching from far away and people who are on the scene itself, you know, there's a lot of things going on. What we need to watch out for are a couple of things. For our family members, we need to find out if their patterns are changing, if they're getting a little more agitated, a little short, they're feeling very tired or sad. You know, people at work, you need to pay attention to those. If they're reacting a little differently, not being themselves, you know, being withdrawn or something like that. So look for unusual patterns, because people react to stress in so many different ways, and we, you know, we caution you. And we encourage you to look for those things.
Chrissy, what are some of the kind of red flags? Hey, we're experiencing stress.
Yeah, I think those are really great things to notice. I would add to that, you know, if you are starting to have some kind of sleep and eating disturbances, for example, trouble falling asleep or sleeping more than usual, feeling really tired, loss of appetite, or, you know, increased just changes in general.
Midnight ice cream.
Exactly. You know, pros and cons to that, for sure. Mm-hmm. There's definitely, you know, I like to think of us as we're all social beings. So how are we feeling in our relationships? How is that in any way different? Are we moving towards people or away from people? And this can happen really subtly. And we can look really normal. So there's a lot of opportunities in our culture to distract and numb out and, you know, text and Netflix, you know, guilty of that. But, you know, just to check in on that, you know, are you really reaching towards people or not?
Raheem.
You know, those are great points. I'd add that, you know, keep a particular eye on your children. I mean, you know, kids react to stress so differently, and you know, I would just keep an eye on them to see if their patterns are changing in any way, if they're reacting differently, because, you know, they're constantly exposed to this information, and I think it's important to pay attention to that.
Well, and one of the things that the Red Cross has kind of highlighted as a way to think about this is, So these particular events we're talking about did not happen here in New Mexico. And one of the ways that we're exposed to information about them, I mean, particularly disturbing images from the Boston Marathon, the information that we had coming out of Texas immediately after the explosion of the fertilizer plant. We didn't know how many people had been injured and the first responders being killed in that explosion. So this information that we're getting, talk about how that kind of 24-hour news cycle may, in a sense, exponentially increase the impact of those kinds of events, even when they're not in our immediate communities or even when we may not have lost loved ones or friends.
I want to address the kids. I mean, you know, when kids are exposed to, and in today's day and age, you know, people are exposed to information from many different avenues, you know, not only radio and TV, but internet, you know, smartphones and all of that. So it's important that, you know, kids get the information and the adults get the information that is necessary, but overexposure can cause a lot of anxiety, cause a lot of, you know, behavioral issues sometimes because, you know, it can cause a lot of stress, mental drainage. And what we recommend is that you need to be careful in terms of how you balance between getting enough information and getting overexposed. The other part that we feel is very important is, you know, when your kids are exposed to something like this, you know, spend some time with them. Give them a hug. Let them know that they're safe. You know, you need to reassure them of their safety. Because when they see this constant on TV and radio or wherever the media is, you know, where they feel that they're not safe, that creates a lot of issues. So as a parent, you know, just keep them assured that they are safe.
What kinds of things have you noticed in your life in the weeks since these particular events? And, of course, there are often events happening around the world that we're exposed to through the news. There was just this week where there was a lot of stuff that happened in the U.S. and therefore received even more media coverage because it was happening here in the U.S. What are you experiencing as a result of these violent events? Did you notice a change in your state of mind or in your ability to be present with your family members and friends? We'd like to hear from you about ways that you dealt with those circumstances and ways that you worked to relieve some of the stress and anxiety in your life. The number to call is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can post comments online at KUNM.org, and you can also send us an email to callinshow@KUNM.org. Chrissy, talk a little bit more about some of the other ways that people can take care of themselves, ways to respond to some of these emotional states we've been talking about.
Definitely. And just to address the news issue that you brought up, it's really disorienting to hear about things that are upsetting, that are going wrong, that we're calling tragedies. And it's a real natural response to want to understand that. So the temptation to keep going into a news show or
finding out more
is real. And it comes from this place of it's really intolerable almost to not have an understanding or not have a sense of meaning. Why are these things happening? So that can create a cycle where we're going in it over and over again. It doesn't necessarily get met that way, though, because the news folks are just kind of reporting. They're not providing answers for those kinds of things. So I would just draw that distinction. And, you know, and self-care really can be about turning off that television and, you know, going outside or, you know, creating a situation for yourself that's going to be soothing and nurturing. And, you know, we tend to think with complex problems that the solutions are going to also be complex, and they're not. They're very simple, and really simple things go a long way, like a hot bath for 15 minutes actually can really make a huge difference. You know, making a cup of tea and holding that mug, you know, so you can feel your hands and start to connect with your body again, and get out of our minds a little bit, because the mind gets really upset and wants to have the answers, and we don't have them.
So how do children process or not their emotional reactions to these kinds of events differently than adults?
Yeah, It is very different. They have completely different brains, for one thing, and a different way of perceiving. So kids are constantly scanning their environment for information. I mean, we call them sponges for a reason, and they are. And they don't have the filters. You know, the adults, we have to be their filters. So they're going to be scanning and really looking at those caregivers, those people that are really important to them, for how to deal with this, what's the right reaction. I mean, this starts in infancy when you have a six-month-old that's crawling and she looks back at mom and says, how's mom feeling about me crawling away? Oh, good. Okay, I'll keep going. So that's a real simple example of what's going on all the time. So if mom and dad or grandpa, you know, grandma, whoever those primary folks are really upset, those kids are going to take those cues from them and say, oh, well, they're upset. I'm upset too.
I mean, I have had experiences like that just in the very recent past with my niece, and having conversations with adults in the presence of my niece, who's going on a year and a half. So she's not talking yet. Mm-hmm. She's very, very conscious about what we're saying and what's going on around her. And it's very easy to see when we get into a deeper and more kind of difficult place emotionally in our adult conversation. She's instantly looking at us as far as like, wait, what's going on? What's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong? Because mm-hmm. she doesn't necessarily understand what's wrong yet, but she knows that there is something wrong.
Yes. I mean, this is like our survival as infants and children is based on our relationship with the caregiver. So we are primed from birth to look for those cues. And we're pretty interactive in that situation from very, very early on. We're watching our caregivers and how they're reacting to us and reacting to other things. And, you know, a kid is unfortunately not going to be able to say to us necessarily, hey, I'm feeling really sad about blah, 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 or I feel really frustrated.
Or adults, for that matter.
Exactly.
Sometimes.
That's true. But they can, you know, have temper tantrums, and they can, you know, take control over things that they do have control over, like refusing to go to sleep or, you know, really increasing their need for autonomy in certain areas that can be really frustrating for adults. Mm-hmm. Rahim was saying before that we should really watch our children during these times, and I think that's really important because they often will show us when we are actually off because they're paying such close attention to us, almost closer attention than we'll pay to ourselves. And mm-hmm. so when our kids are going off, it's usually a clear sign that we have a need to attend to ourselves too.
We're talking about ways that we react to crises and traumatic events as adults and as children, and ways that we can, and strategies for supporting each other in times when things are difficult. We'll also be talking a little later this hour about ways to prepare for traumatic events or crises in the event that they do happen, ways to kind of increase your ability to respond in those situations. We would like to hear from you this morning. How have you found yourself responding to recent violent events like the Boston Marathon bombing or the fertilizer plant explosion in Texas? We'd like to hear from you. What have you observed in your family or your workplace? Are you noticing a shift in the kind of emotional context of interactions with your family and coworkers? 277-5866 is the number to call locally here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can post your comments online at KUNM.org. You can also send an email to callinshow@KUNM.org. Let's go to Glenn in Ponderosa. Glenn, good morning. You're on the air.
Thanks for the conversation. My comment is with regard to how we deal with those traumatic events in the longer term, because crises happen regardless of the scale within the circle of our compassion. So from a child's point of view, it's a more immediate crisis. From an adult's point of view, we look at things like the explosion in West Texas. And yes, those events are traumatic and cause stress, but if we have a method of approaching those that is competent, reduces their damage and mitigates the loss or prevents it from happening in the future, that's going to be less stressful than if we have a leadership or an administration, whether as a parent or as a government, that doesn't deal with the causes of those and doesn't mitigate the damage to those. In fact, in some cases, makes it worse. That's going to continue or prolong that stress, and I'm wondering if your guest could address that.
Raheem, your thoughts on that?
You know, that's a very good point. You know, what we look at it from a Red Cross perspective is, and I think we're going to talk about this later in the show, is the better prepared you are, the more resilient you can be in the short term and long term. And so our emphasis from a Red Cross perspective is preparedness. You know, in terms of the mental health, we usually refer to the professionals like Chrissy to address those things. But from a Red Cross perspective, preparedness is one of the best tools you can have to deal with these things in the short term and long term.
We're going to take a quick break this morning. We're talking about emotional responses to crisis and trauma and ways to be present with our family members and our coworkers and people in our communities and to kind of increase our ability to cope and respond in healthy ways in circumstances like this, even when the events we're talking about may be not in our immediate communities, but maybe in our nation or perhaps in other places in the world. The number to call locally is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. The email address is collinshow@kunm.org. You can also post your comments online. We're hearing from Raheem Balsara. He is with the American Red Cross in New Mexico, and Chrissy Schmidt is a licensed mental health counselor here in New Mexico. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Athena Health, offering physicians a dinner seminar on how to manage the challenges of healthcare payment reform, Thursday, May 2nd at Hotel Albuquerque at Old Town. Details at athenahealth.com/NMNPR.
Let's take another call. Glenn in Hema Springs. Good morning. You're on the air.
Thanks for the program. The comment made earlier about no TV or getting away from your TV, I think is so important. We got rid of ours about 10 years ago, and it just lowers stress level incredibly. And, of course, NPR, you and the other station become our lifeline. We don't have to be stuck to that TV like so many of our neighbors are. And, of course, in New Mexico, get out, as was said, and enjoy nature. The second thing I want to reflect on is what happened to us up here in Hema Springs area 2 years ago with Las Conchas fire. They're already, again, warning us that we may only have a few hours' notice to evacuate. It's so dry up here. And just the thought that one suitcase in the car and get out quick, it's kind of a scary thing. And so the point of your show today is pertinent for us up here. And I guess, you know, worldwide, things just do happen. And I, having been a counselor, I would certainly encourage people to go to counselors when the stress gets so high rather than displace it and go to anger and so on. Thanks, Elaine.
Thanks, Glenn. I mean, I'm thinking about an interview that NPR broadcast yesterday morning on Morning Edition, and I believe they did a second part of it this morning with two of the victims of the Boston Marathon bombing. It was a mother and daughter. The mother lost both of her legs in the bombing, and the daughter was seriously injured in one of her legs. And the interview that NPR broadcast yesterday morning, I mean, I am hosting the show, but I'm also listening to the show at times, and I was parked in the control room, tuned directly into this conversation with these victims of the bombing, and it was very challenging emotionally to get on the air the moment after and be like, hi, I'm on the air. And I think that despite the type of media coverage that you may be consuming, it is still challenging even when you may appreciate the type of coverage more or less, depending on your media diet, so to speak. What are ways to feel connected with people around you, Chrissy, in your life after having had a moment like I had yesterday morning, listening to this interview with this woman who was saying, look, I lost both my legs, but I have my life, and I'm very, very thankful to still be here.
Yeah, what a great question, and it sort of follows up on the last two callers, what they're bringing up too, which is how do we respond to this and stay awake and not make it worse by trying to ignore or deny our feelings. And dialogue actually is really powerful. So calls like this. Your last caller talked about seeking a counselor, you know, or also just our coworkers, the people that we're engaging with on a day-to-day basis. You know, your example of coming into the studio with some upset from that conversation and then having to shift into another role. I think we all benefit from those moments where we can just be really authentic and transparent about that. Like, because it does allow more and more of us to say, oh, she's affected. Oh, I'm affected too. Okay, and this is okay. Like, it's okay to fall apart when these things happen. And the more that we can do that together, and it takes, you know, that little ounce of courage to kind of be vulnerable, because we are. None of us in this human, you know, experience gets to get away with not being vulnerable. You know, we are by nature that way. So the more that we can find that in ourselves to say, I'm feeling really sad today about this, and I'm here and I'm going to keep going, I'm going to do my job, but I'm feeling sad, it opens the doors and it brings down barriers of isolation. That actually, the isolation is what breeds the depression and the anxiety and the overwhelm a lot more. So it can feel difficult to open up, but it's actually good medicine.
Yeah. What might a conversation like that with a child sound like?
Yeah.
What are the kinds of strategies that parents can use to literally speak with a child about something like the bombing in Boston?
Right. Well, first, I would want to say that children don't necessarily need to know all these things that are going on, especially really young children. They're not actually capable of understanding it the way that we would. And it's really okay for kids to have, it's and a good thing for them to have a sense of like the world is good. And actually, children really need that. It builds a great reference point for them as they grow up and become adults, and they can have a sense of like what's right and what's wrong in a real accurate way. So, you know, we don't necessarily want to involve our kids in these kinds of adult discussions. If they're exposed to it and they maybe have questions, we can answer those as matter-of-factly. And developmentally appropriate to their age and understanding. It's really good for us as adults to try not to put on our own process, our own feelings, and our own thoughts onto our kids and suspect or assume that they would be having the same response, because they don't. They're not thinking about it the same way. They might not be upset about the Boston Marathon situation at all, but they might be upset that their mom is upset. Okay, so one of the things that we can talk about with kids in light of that transparency is saying, you know, mom's feeling really sad about this thing that happened, you know, pretty far away, and it's not important for you to know about it, and it's not your fault, and I love you, and I'm here, and I'm doing my best, and, you know, let's go do something today together that's going to feel really good to both of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Raheem, you were nodding your head.
No, I was just thinking about my son, you know.
How did you have the conversation? Have you talked? How old is your son?
He's almost four.
Okay.
So, you know, so I came home, you know, I was very stressed with the West Texas, you know, explosion. And, you know, the Red Cross response was in full force. And we were trying to, you know, figure out, you know, how to take care of the needs of those that were affected here and other places. And so I came home, I was very stressed. And, you know, my son was just looking at me and I said, "What's the matter? Are you sad?" He says, "Yeah, Daddy, I'm sad." I said, "Why?" Because he says, "You look sad, and so I'm sad." And you know, it just kind of reminded me, and as you said, you know, they look at you so closely. I didn't realize that, and, you know, he was telling me. And I said, you know, it's going to be okay. You know, and I just said, you know, we're okay. You know, we'll be okay. I said, it's okay to be sad. So you know, I'm not a professional, but what I felt at that time was it was important to acknowledge his feelings, acknowledge my feelings, and just say, you know, it's going to be okay. Let's do something fun. So you're so right about, you know, what you just mentioned. And thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
Have you as a listener, observed behavior in your children, or perhaps have your children served as a mirror in this way, reflecting back the anxiety or stress that you might be experiencing? We'd like to hear from you this morning. The number to call is 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. You can also call 877-899-5866. You can post comments online at KUNM.org. You can also send an email to Colin Show at KUNM.org. One of the things that Glenn in Hemis Springs brought up was the threat of wildfire in New Mexico. It is wildfire season. I mean, even just this morning, I mean, it's super big gusty winds this morning with this front that has moved into the state, but still pretty dry. Raheem, talk a little bit about what kinds of things folks like Glenn can do to be prepared for that 2-hour evacuation notice.
That's a very good question. And one, there are many different ways you can be prepared. But in cases of wildfire, one of the things that I would put out there is Red Cross is really, really leveraging technology. There are smartphone apps that are available on wildfire that will keep you informed every step of the way, you know, when the fire starts, you know, what's going on, where the shelters are, so you can be truly prepared. And you know, again, going back to the stress level, it does cause a lot of stress when you have this last-minute evacuation that is ordered. And the best thing in my mind you can do is, you know, to deal with stress is to be prepared, know what to do in times of emergencies. That can really reduce your stress and your anxiety because you feel that you're in control because you know what you need to do. And to be able to do that, you need to really, you know, learn what you need to do before the disaster happens.
So when you something that folks might need to prepare and have and to be ready for something like that, you had mentioned to me was it a 3-day?
3-day go kit.
A 3-day go kit. So explain what a 3-day go kit is. And I mean, this is not something that you should be throwing together during that 2 hours after you've got the evacuation notice, right?
That's correct. I mean, you know, there are many different situations. You know, you need to make sure that, you know, when you're ready, when this kind of 2-hour evacuation notice happens, again, you know, keep your phones next to you, keep your apps ready to go, which Red Cross apps are very, very helpful. And one of the things is the first aid app that's on there. You know, if you don't know what you need or what needs to be taken, you have that information right in the palm of your hands. But, you know, the go kit is very simple. Keep your important documents with you, you know, a gallon of water per person per day, your medications, your toiletries, your essentials. So when you're ready to go, you know, and people don't think about this, but, you know.
I mean, I don't have a to-go kit prepped in my home.
Exactly. And you know, the other part of it is what we don't realize in this day and age, pets are part of the family. Have you thought about your pets? Because when you leave, you're going to have to take your pets with you. You know, all the necessary things for your pets, are they ready to go? You know, is it in the back of your trunk so you can keep going? So those kinds of things are part of your go kit, you know. Make a plan, prepare a kit, get involved. I mean, that's what we say to be really, you know, the best way to deal with disasters.
Are there, Chrissy, conversations that people can have with their children and their family members that kind of work as a emotional to-go kit? Ways to kind of be prepped to either have communication strategies or, you know, in the event that something is happening that we're not, you know, that we don't want to happen, but here's how we're going to approach that.
To me, that's more of a lifestyle and a practice and an ongoing situation. You know, starting really young with your children, you know, reflecting that feeling back to them. So you have a kid that's maybe really mad because he's not getting a toy or he's not getting something. And so before we want to fix that or have him change his behavior or, you know, make him quiet or settle down, we really want to let him know that we see that. And we say, you're really mad right now. You're really mad. And that's a way of validating his experience. It's a way of validating feelings as real. And it can start to regulate. So the more that we can do that for ourselves and in relationship to each other, that starts to create a cohesion in the group and in the family that, you know, it's okay for me to be myself no matter what I feel, no matter what I look like or what I need to say. And that creates a real emotional safety because we are going to get rocked around and we are going to have feelings and things are going to come up. I mean, there's chaos going on. I don't really see it letting up. So the more that we can get comfortable with being in and out of that sort of stasis, you know, kind of dipping into other feelings and having a dialogue about them, being willing to name them, makes a huge difference in a family.
Chrissy Schmidt is a licensed mental health counselor in New Mexico. She is also a home visitor and mental health consultant with the United Way of Santa Fe County's Children's Project. Rahim Balsara is with the American Red Cross here in New Mexico. And we're taking your calls this morning on coping with not only the emotional impact of violent events or traumatic situations, but also in ways to be prepared for the unknown, to be prepared for what is unknown and might be difficult in the future. We would like to hear from you this morning. The number to call is 277-5866. Perhaps you'd like to share a way that you have communicated with your child or your family member about recent traumatic events. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can email callinshow@kunm.org. You can also post comments online at kunm.org. Do you have kids, Chrissy?
I do.
Talk to me about what your experience has been with your children recently.
Well, my daughter, who is four, so I like that little serendipitous there. She is, you know, so attuned to me in such a way that I usually notice when I need some help, when her behavior starts to move into what, you know, folks might call problem behavior, you know, when she's really pushing my buttons. And I've come to understand that as, Mom, I need you. Where are you? You're kind of lost in your thoughts. You're preoccupied with other things, and I need your attention. I need some connection with you. I need you to get down on my level. And, you know, in general, there's usually a lot of subtle cues that come first. And
what are some of those cues? Like, what do you observe? Right. How do you know that she's in that place?
Well, the subtler cues would be much more mild. So, you know, really kind of just coming to stand near me, bringing me something she's interested in, trying to engage in some ways. And maybe I'm doing a pretty good job in that moment and I get down and I interact with her, or maybe I'm really busy and I'm trying to do three things at once and I miss it over and over, or I keep brushing her off because I've got other things on my mind. And then her behavior can get louder and louder and louder and more irritating because she really knows that will get my attention finally. And sometimes it gets to that point. And, you know, and I'd like to just say here, too, that as parents, you know, we're not expected to be perfect, and our kids don't expect us to be perfect. It's actually not relatable perfection. You know, we need to be good enough, and we need to be ourselves, and that's really what our kids want from us. So it's really important to talk about that process of like, oh, I missed your cue. Okay, I got it now. Thanks for coming back and being relentless, and I'll meet you now, and I'll put this down for just a minute. And it generally is only about 10 minutes or 5 minutes that they really need us to say, yeah, I'm here with you, and I can be present in this moment. And then they're fine to go off and do their thing, and you can get back to, you know, those very important dishes or whatever, you know, needs to happen.
Rahim, what are the cues that you have noticed with your son, with your 4-year-old son?
You know, it's so interesting. He's so expressive. So, you know, it's like, you know, he will just literally mirror. And you know, when my wife and I are, you know, stressed for whatever reason or something comes up, you know, he will immediately react to that. And, you know, we'll just, or, you know, like you said, you know, he'll do the same things or, you know, try to get your attention. And it's important to pay attention to those things, you know, because when they're looking for your attention, they really want to convey something to you. At least that's how I take it. Like I said, I'm not an expert, but that's how I take it is, you know, there's something to be learned from that. And so just paying attention to those details, you know, helps us a lot in terms of dealing with some of these things.
Chrissy, let's talk about another age group. What are the kind of developmental age groups when you think about different ways of responding to kids? So we've talked about very, very young kids who maybe don't need to know
right
exactly what's going on. When do you start acknowledging to children that they know that something bad has happened, that people have been hurt, that people have been killed? When do you start acknowledging that and kind of including more information in your interaction with children? Because they've, as we know, they've been perhaps exposed to news coverage or
right.
images or, you know, so
mm-hmm.
Where does that age group kind of transition into a different strategy?
Yeah. A general answer to that would be, you know, we want to follow our kids' lead on that. Developmentally, you know, it might look like after those early school years, you know, when they're really getting more into their peers and really, you know, look at what they're learning in school and how that broadens. And so when the world starts getting bigger, it becomes more appropriate when that world is really small still and just family, just a few friends. You know, maybe not so much, and we're always going to be wanting to follow their lead. So what are they interested in? What are they asking? And if that relationship is there and it's secure and there's been that emotional safety, then those kids will come to those caregivers and with those kinds of concerns and questions. So I think, I lost my train of thought there.
That's all right. Raheem, do you have thoughts?
No, I think, you know, it's just limiting their exposure to those things, acknowledging their feelings. And again, you know, from a Red Cross perspective, I can't emphasize enough in terms of being prepared. I mean, I know that people think of these large-scale disasters away from home, but, you know, just something that when I first moved to New Mexico, it was really something that I learned is that virtually every single day right here in the state of New Mexico, someone's house burns down. And people lose everything that they have in front of them. And the most vulnerable in these situations are older adults and kids. You know, what are we doing to really mitigate those kinds of situations? Because large-scale disasters, you know, like the wildfires, and I'm not minimizing those are very traumatic events, and they happen seasonally from time to time. But these things, you know, single-family fires are the largest disasters that Americans face every single day and takes most amount of lives. And you know, so starting with the basics, starting with small things, I think is very, very important. And as I mentioned, the most vulnerable are older adults and children. And again, you know, that doing that, you know, regular drills, we can talk about that later.
Well, but let's talk about a regular drill. Tell us what this is the fire drill in your own home.
You know,
is what you're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, if you think about it, again, as I mentioned, that, you know, when people know what to do in times of crises, gives them that confidence, reduces the level of anxiety, and keeps them prepared, and obviously saves lives. So the question in my mind is, you know, do you have as a family a plan if there's a fire to escape from your house? Do you have two escape routes, you know? Stress on family members away from here. So you could have a single family fire, and you could have a family in Chicago. You know, what if they can't find you? Do you have a place to contact them? Do you have ways to contact them? Do your kids know how to call 911? Do you have an escape route? Do you check your smoke alarm batteries, you know, twice a year? Do you replace them? Do you have a place to meet, safe place to meet away from home in case there's a fire? Things like these, I think, are important because, you know, you can incorporate them as a fun thing with your kids to do at home to say, hey, you know, it's time for that drill. Let's try that. You know, where would you go if this happened? But at the same time, you're really doing something that can save lives. Mm-hmm. So that's just one example of it.
Chrissy, your thoughts on that, that kind of family dynamic of having a system in place that everybody's familiar with, does that have the same impact on children?
I think anything that's consistent and clear is really going to create safety for everyone. And if mom and dad feel more at ease and more reassured, then the kids are also going to feel that way. So we also would want to check about, you know, what's the state of mind that we're maybe running that drill in? You know, is it fun? Is it made fun and simple? Or is there, you know, are mom and dad really freaked out when they're doing this and we don't really understand why? That's going to have a huge impact on kids. They're really tuned into our state of mind, even if what we're doing looks really perfect.
Yeah.
So just being conscious of where you're coming from, what are you motivated by, and how are you coming across? What's your tone of voice? What does your facial expression look like? And I guess I found my train of thought that I lost earlier, which is, you know, in terms of relating to children, we're always wanting that instruction manual, you know, and that's kind of the running joke. Like, they don't come with one. But the reframe is that, you know, they are it. Each child is their own instruction manual. So what we get to do as the grown-ups is just really pay close attention to them. And you know, we know our kids, and just like we know, like, oh, this kid might be getting a little sick, you know, she's acting kind of weird or kind of droopy or lethargic, you know, we can take that temperature on an emotional level too and learn to sense, like, something's off here.
What about responding to adults in your life? Because as you said, droopy, I'm like, you know, there are times when I definitely feel droopy, where your whole kind of momentum in your life force just kind of slows way down. And talk about ways to recognize that in partners. Adult siblings or coworkers even.
Right.
I think sometimes we spend so much time in the workplace with our coworkers, and we often forget that we can build those kinds of responses with each other in the workplace too.
Right, right. Because we're all human beings, really. And I think it goes a really long way to go up to someone and say, "How are you?" And really genuinely, with sincerity, you know, ask that question and be willing to listen. And if you only have 30 seconds, maybe not ask it right then, you know, because we don't really want to open the door and then say, oh, see ya, you know, sorry, got to go. But if you have the time and with that sincerity, how are you, you know, and open that dialogue. And that's a way that we can be leaders, I think, with each other and in partnerships especially. It's so easy in partnerships to want our partners, and I recognize this in myself too, want our partners to be that strong person for us. And when they're not, it's scary. And instead of asking, how are you, I might get mad and say, like, why can't you just, you know, be normal and, you know, be fine? And, you know, can't we just go on as usual, like, and create this harmony? And it's just... it comes from my own fear, you know, my own fear of like wanting the world to be really predictable and okay. And when it's not, it's scary for us too. So, again, opening that dialogue and how are you? And I'm feeling that way too.
We are taking your calls this morning. How have you found success dealing with reactions to recent violent events in the nation and in the world? How are you working with your kids to create understanding and to kind of move through, as Rahima said, difficult times? How are you working to make that something that is not destructive in your relationships and in your family? The number to call is 277-5866, locally here in Albuquerque. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. We take your emails, and that is callinshow@kunm.org. We also will take your comments. You can post them online at kunm.org. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Come enjoy the Southwest Herbalism and Curanderismo Healing and Ritual Saturday, May 4th from 1 to 4 p.m. at the Maxwell Museum. Attend the exhibition opening, receive a spiritual cleansing, and learn about local herbs and permaculture gardens. For details, call 277-4405 or visit maxwellmuseum.unm.edu. That's Saturday, May 4th, 1 p.m. A message from the tax-exempt Maxwell Museum of Anthropology.
The University of New Mexico and KUNM remind you that the KUNM Radio Board election is coming to a close. Voting is open to contributing listeners and KUNM volunteers. Ballots are due no later than April 1st at 5 p.m. Please mail your ballot in a timely fashion to the address on the ballot or hand deliver your ballot to the University Secretary's office in Scholes Hall on the UNM campus. Please do not deliver your ballot to the KUNM studios. Thanks for your participation.
This is the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Elaine Baumgartel. We're speaking this morning with Rahim Balsara. He is with the American Red Cross here in New Mexico. And Chrissy Schmidt, she is a licensed mental health counselor, and she has a lot of experience with children and the ways that children develop developmentally, dealing with the various issues that we have in our lives. And we are taking your calls this morning about ways that you are coping or not coping with your emotional reactions to recent events or the challenges that your family members, coworkers, children may be having in their emotional responses and also in preparedness for the chance that something might also happen to us. The number to call locally is 277-5866. You can also call toll-free 877-899-5866. You can email callinshow@kunm.org or post your comments online. Let's go to David in Santa Fe. Good morning, David. You're on the air.
Lane, said I listen to programs in the media like this one, hoping at this point that I don't have to go to the effort of making a contact because of something I heard. And nowadays, every program has a way to contact them, not necessarily live on the air, but off air through email to the producers and the program hosts themselves. And today I was hoping just to enjoy my morning, but I hear some things that I have to comment on. And so in less than 90 seconds, let me rattle a few off. First of all, we're talking about, you know, children and how children are coping. And just let me throw out there, and this ties into what you're talking about as well, and you'll see in a second. I don't have the ability to comfort my children or see how they're doing because I've been wrongly separated from them. However, I did just win them back at the Court of Appeals here in the state of New Mexico. And that's all I'll say on that. However, the way that ties in is that was an unnecessary, stressful event in my life and in my children's lives for the last 6 years. And that relates to this, the bombing, for instance. I'm sorry, let me tie it into the forest fire issue that Glenn brought up and that we all live with here in the U.S., especially in the western U.S., is, you know, I watch the Forest Service every day, and they messed it up over the last 100 years, and they're slowly fixing it. They're starting to do preventative stuff, but I see very, very, very little activity compared to the amount of how our lives are affected after the fire starts. And I'm out in the forest all the time, and I see very little going on, and I do see exactly what is going on and is good, and they need to do more of it, but they're not doing enough. And the point of that is that we're not doing enough to prevent the stressful things from happening so that we don't have to deal with the stress, period, where, you know, because it won't happen. You know, with the fire stuff, you know, get on the ball and do the work that needs to be done, and we won't have to live under this constant fear. On the subject of the bombing, it's tragic when anybody gets hurt, when anybody gets killed, when anybody loses a leg. But in the case of the bombing, if you want to go to professional mental health counseling viewpoint, it's, let's use the word irrational. It's an irrational fear to live our lives like there might be a bomb going off in some gathering. In that case, sure, it happened. When was the time that it happened before? In this case, it was lucky. There could have been 100 people killed in that one, but there were only a few. Now, we don't talk for a second, hardly, relatively speaking, about, we drive our automobiles every day. In the state of New Mexico today, there probably will be 3 people killed. And we don't have radio programs about worrying about the stress and the anxiety of getting in our car, and we really should. That's just one example. And I'm about done here, just I have one more thought that came up. Oh, one last thing. You know, I've gotten lots and lots of good help from professionals, from the authorities, whether they're law enforcement or they're professional counselors or they're attorneys or they're judges. But I tell you what, approaching, I would say realistically, 30 to 40% of the time, they're in error, no matter what authority there are. And we need to rely more and more and more on our own instincts and abilities and education and skills. And I'll shut up now and listen to the rest of your program.
Thanks for your call, David. David brought up the way that there are a lot of risks that we face in our life on a regular basis that don't receive the same kind of attention as these kind of, as you've been calling them, large-scale traumatic events. Raheem, talk a little bit about some of the risks that catch us off guard, like being in car accidents or having house fires. You talk about preparedness there. Can you talk a little bit more about ways to be prepared for other traumatic events? What are the ways to have things set up in your life so that if something traumatic happens in your life, as it is likely to do at some point, right? What are ways?
You know, be informed. You know, one of the things that, you know, people talked about is these small-scale disasters. I mean, and I'll go into, you know, daily things. You know, getting in the car and getting hurt, you know, is very realistic. But, you know, my question to you is, do you know that if you're working in your backyard, you know, and if you have a cardiac arrest, do you know what to do? You know, are you, when you're doing gardening, you know, and you get yourself hurt, you know, do you know what to do? Have you learned first aid? Have you taken a CPR class? You know, from our perspective, I'm a big proponent of the fact that, you know, if you know what to do in times of small scale or large scale disasters, you know, something that has happened in your backyard or something that has happened while you're driving or house fire, you know, if you are prepared, take a CPR class, take a Red Cross class, learn what to do, you know, have a first aid kit in your car. You know, those kinds of small things give you that peace of mind and help you so much in any types of emergency situations, whether it be a car accident or an accident in your backyard.
And Chrissy, I want to come to you with a question about why do we not think about the risks of getting into a car every day? What is the function psychologically of not living in a constant state of fear?
Yeah. you know, denial has sort of gotten a bad rap. And, you know, we can take it to the extreme, but it's actually a very useful thing. And the way we have an ability to compartmentalize in our minds is a really useful tool. And it's appropriate, you know, in those situations because we are driving and we are, you know, it's like I was saying before, you know, the nature of being human is being vulnerable. And we don't really know. And accidents do happen. And I think the caller brought up so many important points. And, you know, one of my responses to the Boston Marathon was, you know, it's a large scale event, but it helped me become present again to what is every day, which is that this life is precious and the people that I care about are precious to me. And I'm going to tell them so today. And I'm going to respond that way because there are so many things that we don't have control over. We just really don't. And so we can really choose how we respond to that.
Raheem, one of the other things I was thinking of is that often in response to these kinds of events, one of the things that we as members of a community, we as humans do, is that we want to help. And that is one of the roles that the American Red Cross plays in, as you were mentioning, responding to assist families whose homes have burned down in New Mexico, and then also on the larger scale, responding to like the explosion of the fertilizer plant in Texas. So how, I mean, people don't just have to wait until something big happens in order to reach out and help, at least through the Red Cross, for example. Talk about avenues for participation and helping in community preparedness for folks who want to get involved.
That's a very good question. Thank you so much for asking. One of the things that people don't realize is, you know, in addition to making a kit, preparing a plan, you know, the third thing I mentioned is get involved. 90% of the American Red Cross workforce is volunteers, people like you in the community who want to make a difference. You know, when these large-scale disasters happen, and I've been in quite a few, or, you know, when you see someone's house burned down on TV, you're like, what can I do to help this person? I wish I could do something. And, you know, being part of the American Red Cross, joining our volunteer force, getting the training so you can help someone, you know, will make a big difference in your life and those that have been affected by disaster. We encourage you to take the training. All training provided by American Red Cross for volunteers are free of charge. Learn how to be prepared yourself, take care of your family, but also your community. So we encourage you to get involved.
Thanks. Raheem Balsara is with the American Red Cross here in New Mexico. Chrissy Schmidt is a licensed mental health care professional here in New Mexico. Thank you both very much for your time this morning. It was some deep kind of emotional stuff we were dealing with, and I appreciate your ability to roll with me during the show. Thanks to all of you for tuning in and listening this morning and for calling in with your comments and questions. We'll be back next Thursday morning at 8 o'clock for the KUNM Call-In Show. If you'd like to hear this show or other shows that we've produced in the past, you can visit us online at KUNM.org. If you have comments or tips for future show topics, you can email those to callinshow@KUNM.org or post your comments online at KUNM.org. I'm Elaine Baumgartel, and this is KUNM.